out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 291. This is the Mistakes Happen edition here at the Caffeination Podcast. Hopefully everybody out there is having a great week. We're doing pretty good here at the Caffeination Lair. Lots of stuff happening, lots of real fun stuff for you on today's show and beyond. We're starting out a couple different things that we've tried before, see if we can make them stick this time. And today's show is entitled Mistakes Happen for a very good reason. About over 6 months ago, I did an interview with a fine fellow by the name of Mike Rohde, and I promptly moved all of the files onto my iPod, which I was using at that time to move back and forth, and then the iPod crashed. Of course, I had deleted them off my computer, and I was too embarrassed to say anything at the time. But I managed somehow to recover those files from the iPod because I was able to turn it onto disk mode and do everything else just this past week, and I got the audio edited up and cleaned up, and I think it sounds pretty good. So I'm going to be releasing the interview at the end of this show. Hopefully you're going to enjoy that. It's a detailed talk with Mike Rohde about a couple different fun little coffee topics that come up between two gentlemen who happen to like coffee a whole lot, as well as a discussion of Mike's fantastic calendar called the Sketchtoons Coffee Calendar. And I already ordered mine for this coming year. I suggest that you do the same. It's really good stuff. So we're going to get into that in just a little bit later. There is a huge amount of topics on today's show that we need to cover, and they are in any no uncertain term, rather, but resurrection, mistakes, coffee, beer, archaeology, chemistry, Christmas, and robots. So it's a huge different kind of show, but then again, I'd say every show that we do around here is different. And before we get on too much further in the show, I did want to talk to you just a little bit about the sponsor for today's podcast. If you have to travel for business, I have great news. There is an easier and more affordable way to do so. GoToMeeting is the award-winning service that lets you hold meetings over the internet with people in multiple locations. Just log on to GoToMeeting.com and start meetings with a click. Instantly, everyone sees your computer desktop on their screen. It's like meeting in person, but with a whole lot less expenses and seriously less time consuming. Meet from your office, your home, your hotel room, anywhere, anytime. Plus, you can hold as many meetings as you want for one flat rate. Try GoToMeeting free today for 30 days. Just visit GoToMeeting.com/tech podcasts. That's GoToMeeting.com/tech podcasts. Do more and travel less with GoToMeeting. I'd like to thank GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at the Caffeination Podcast. They allow us to do all the fun stuff that we're doing. Still trying to get used to the whole new setup down here in the Caffeination Lair. Still don't have a proper captain's chair to operate from, so we're still using a lawn chair. I got to tell you, there is nothing more uncomfortable than trying to operate a podcast of this size and magnitude from a lawn chair. It's just it would even be a little bit different if it was one of those reclining ones. At least I could relax, throw the mic up a little bit higher and try and rock it out that way. This is just, I don't know. It's supposed to be like a patio set or something. It just doesn't have the right groove to it. So, all right, we have a ton of stuff to talk to you about today, like I said. So we're going to dive right on in. Before we do that, I did just want to mention, because I can't remember off the top of my head if I'd done it already or not, but hey, this is a show all about mistakes, so if it happened, it happened. If you are looking for this podcast, you can find it over at www.caffeination.com. That is caffeination.com, and being that this is the Caffeination Podcast, we thought that that would be the perfect place to put a podcast such as this. So that's where you can find it. You can also email us comments, feedback, suggestion, hate mail, whatever else you find, whatever else strikes your fancy at any given point in time, over at caffeination@gmail.com. All right, we're going to start in on the Tech Cruft section here with an article I wrote yesterday, or actually the past couple days, but it got finished yesterday, so I thought I'd play around with it. It's, what type of tech are you? And I this is kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing. It's a techs like to categorize themselves, and the bad thing is, anybody who's not a technology person, who's not an IT support professional, who may or may not realize what happens. But when you're at a family function or something else, and you're struck with somebody who does not know what you do, and they ask you, it's like, well, what do you do? Well, if you're any kind of tech that I know, that you have probably have like 15 or 16 different jobs at your particular day job. But what, you know, you fit into a couple different categories, maybe. You might be more of one type than the other. But it takes a little bit too long to explain all that. So, you say I'm the computer guy or something along those lines, and it's a good enough answer for government work, but it doesn't really fit exactly what you are. So we're starting to kind of list out the different types of tech, and maybe it's my anthropological background that I like to categorize and label everything, but we have a quick rundown that I'm going to give you here. I heartily suggest you head on over there, see if you can find which tech types you've interacted with in your life. I know I've hit most of them. I may be one or two of them. The first one's called I'm an Island Tech. No, it doesn't mean I get to play tech support on or help desk on an exotic island, but rather this is the kind of tech support person that you would find surrounded by the people that he or she needs to help. So this is the person who's put into a department or something like that, and everybody they see at any given point in time has the capability of asking them a question that they are expected to respond to. It's a little bit of a loner lifestyle, but it gets kind of interesting because things keep fresh. There's a lot more tongue-in-cheek commentary over there, and I sort of got a little punchy halfway through the article. The next thing you're going to see is the team techs. Everybody knows these people. They kind of travel in packs. They might all be the guys from one particular department or one particular school or anything else like that. They're the people who show up en masse every time there's free lunch. They're the ones who travel and pack at the bars during happy hour after the fact. They have specific different things that each one of them does. Like, one's the AV guy, one's the server gal, one's the printer people. You know, it's like everybody has their own tiny little niche within the group that they take care of. It's kind of like you have the alpha male and all the other stuff that runs down. It's pretty fun. You have the help desk techs, who are the absolute front line. They're the shock troops of the tech world. They are the ones who have seen absolutely everything. You might not know it, but they talk about you behind your back. I'm going to let you know right now, they talk about cup holders and any keys because they are real, they are horrible, and they have seen the depths of a man's soul. They have faced with the sheer volume of requests. These people will gladly pawn off these requests to other people in the hopes that they'll be able to take the load down. You have the AV techs, the people who scurry into presentations and lectures and try and fix the computer while the presenter or lecturer makes snide comments about that person. Oh, well, you know, these silly computers. Well, sir, maybe if you had updated PowerPoint since 1992, we wouldn't be having this problem here. You know, a little bit of forethought might help with that. Techs as a whole tend to be a little snarky because we are dealt with people who have less knowledge about certain things than we do. That is not a good thing necessarily, but it is a funny thing in a proper life. You also have the stage techs, the people who deal with anything and everything on stage, from audio to video to lighting. When things go wrong for a stage tech, it is unbelievably bad. However, when things go right, they are vapor. You have the printer techs. These people get no respect at all. These are the people who are supposed to be fixing your printer when you're supposed to have a document printed out 20 minutes ago. They're the ones who can field strip a laser printer, as I said in the thing, in 5 minutes just to pull out the transparency that's not for laser printers that you so happily fit into it. You have the server techs. They run the email, the internet. Everything might be broken, but pray to whatever god you believe in before you ask them to fix it. They are on the front line of providing services. They are the people that get called on Christmas morning when you get a BlackBerry, and they are supposed to be running the servers that make that BlackBerry go. Then, of course, you have the elevated techs, the manager techs. These are the people who manage techs. They've seen everything in the trenches. They've done different jobs, but they just have the unenviable task of trying to translate what their techs do to people who aren't techs. It's a very trying existence. And then last, but most certainly not least, you have root. These are the people who hide in the darkest corners because that's frankly where they grew. There's a whole bunch of other stuff that's up there, and I highly suggest, and I would really like some feedback on that. We are working for what type of user are you that I'm going to be posting hopefully Friday. I got a couple different suggestions for that, and I'm working on the article there. I want to keep the kind of the same little lighthearted tongue-in-cheek thing here going, but I've gotten a lot of good response, and the funny thing is, the people who are the techs say, yes, this is so me. This is the things that I am responsible for. This is the goofballs that I meet during the course of a day. And then the people who are, you know, the users, the people who are being supported say, oh my god, I hate when this kind of tech shows up. I can't stand when the server tech comes around, gives me that knowing look, rolls his eyes, and tells me that no, I can't send an attachment that's 125 megs, and I ask him why, and I get more of an eye roll. So it's kind of fun to see this, and hopefully I kind of, I tried to nail down exactly the kind of techs that I've seen in my own life. And for more often than not, I am the island in tech. I work in a university department. However, most of the people who are in my own department, the computer services department, are in other places. So everything within those walls is pretty much under my domain. And it's fun, it's rewarding, it's challenging, but at the same point in time, it can get a little loopy. I'm not even gonna lie to you there, but it's a fun existence, to say the least. All right, moving on to stuff I didn't write. Over a billion served. I'm not talking about McDonald's anymore, but I'm talking about Logitech. Logitech has created their 1 billionth mouse during the course of the company's life cycle. The first mouse they ever introduced was in 1982, the Logitech P4. I don't know why it was the P4, if it was the first mouse ever introduced, but we have come a long way since then. I am currently using a Logitech trackball on my computer. I don't know if that's technically counted in there with the mice, but it is a pointing device, so it's really cool. So congratulations to Logitech for that huge milestone that you've passed. Up next, we have a little story from over at Gizmodo. The Rec bookcase grows to accommodate your collection. Imagine if an accordion was given a cross-section and then pushed together. What happens when you pull it apart is you create spaces in between each one of the different folds. The Rec bookcase system. These spaces allow you to have different places to put your books. So this is really kind of interesting and cool. I don't know if it's going to pass muster. You know, I don't know if you're actually going to be able to buy one of these. It could just be a design concept, but I thought it was fun, so I thought I'd decide to pass it on. All right, up next, have you ever heard of a Roomba that would clean your windows? Well, now you might. There's a bunch of students from over at MSU who have decided to take it upon themselves to create a robot and enter it into the Winboney robot. They called it the Winboney, but they entered it into a contest. This thing runs only on AA batteries. They won the contest. It actually cleans the windows with felt pads. Is autonomous beyond the button to start the thing, and it operates completely on its own. It runs around the outside of a building and can clean windows. It's a stunning advancement in I guess window cleaning and robotics in general, because it uses suction cups to adhere to the windows. I do not think that it's going to be that much longer now before you start to see. I mean, even tethered robots, but. Robots moving up and down the outer surfaces of the large skyscrapers in big cities, they're going to be robots are going to be cleaning the outside of the buildings, because they're a lot quicker, they're more agile, and if one of those falls, there's no OSHA lawsuit unless it hits somebody on the bottom end, you know? So even if they have them tethered so they don't have to use the AA batteries, they could use that as a backup, but they have a cord attached to them, it'd be kind of fun to see where this could go. So again, this is only the prototype. There's a fun little YouTube video up there if you'd like to check and see exactly what it looks like, but it's going to be really cool to see where this ends up. All right, up next, have a little bit of a conducive behavior. I don't mean things that are good for the podcast, although this article might be, but this is a way to make your artwork sing. This is called the Draudio Music Pencil. It uses the conducive properties of lead, wraps the pencil in a conductive sheet of copper, and has a system attached to the back end of the pencil so that when you draw, if you touch the copper line, completing the circuit, it actually creates a sound. Now, this is the sound that it actually makes. I'm going to see if I can manage to get all the different things working here, stopping all the other audio so you'll be able to hear it. But this is the sound that it makes, or one of the many sounds. Little weird, little squeaky, but it's kind of fun. And you could see where, I kind of pulled it out of the video that's there. It's going to be one of those things where it's going to evolve over time. You're going to see different things happening with that. But it's going to be interesting to see exactly where that one ends up the same way. It works a little bit on the same theory that, you know, a lot of the people, it's called hand conductivity or conducive hand syndrome, where you're trying to tune a radio station to a particular frequency, and you get the frequency, you're like, yeah, this is the rock station, this is the rap station, this is the whatever station that I want to listen to. And as soon as you take your hand away and you remove the antenna that is yourself from the equation, all of a sudden it's no longer tuned to that little station there anymore. It's somewhat similar to the same thing, but I've also seen a much, much better implementation in my own office. Now, not in the office where I work, but since I work in the architecture department at the university, we have a wood shop in the department. And about 2 years ago, the wood shop manager decided that he was going to use a new kind of saw that he had found on the internet or seen talked about. It's called the Saw Stop. The Saw Stop uses the same kind of conducive properties of the human body. Yeah, and if the blade ever comes into contact with something completing the circuit, then the blade automatically retracts and blows a circuit, blows a fuse actually inside. They can pull the blade and retract it within 5/1000th of a second. So this is, it's unbelievable. So injuries on a table saw are usually quite dire. So if you're sitting there pushing wood through the table saw and you manage to slip, it would take fingers off. It would cut hands off. There were people who have their lives irrevocably altered by these kind of accidents. Since we work in a university, these accidents are very bad for business in general. And, you know, it's just not a good way to operate. Now, with the idea about Saw Stop, is that as soon as the circuit is completed, the blade is pulled below the surface. You head on over to sawstop.com. You can actually check out some of the videos. They show you it with a hot dog. It's pretty funny. But I've seen what happens when we've had, I think the blade's been tripped 3 times so far in 2 years. 2 times were actual incidents, and the other time it was a mistake. There's certain things you can and you can't cut with these things. I think you need to turn dirt certain things off if you're trying to cut metal, because metal obviously conducts electricity a little bit better than wood. But I don't know all the ins and the outs of it, but the saw itself is a little bit expensive. But when you really think about it, I mean, there is quite a possibility that the two students who were cutting something who weren't paying attention could have lost fingers. And now all that happens is, instead of losing a finger, instead of, you know, being maimed, they have a tiny little scratch. So using the same kind of properties that you saw in the Goofy Draudio pen, the Saw Stop takes something to a whole nother level. They have two different ones there. They have the table saw, and they also have a new contractor saw, which I hadn't seen before. So we have the table saw variety. Insanely awesome. So I highly suggest, if you're in the kind of business where you're going to be buying, you know, large scale core woodworking equipment, you might want to take a look at the Saw Stop if you have a shop of any kind of size, because it can seriously do some good there for you. All right, moving right along here. Do you have a sick feeling in your tummy ever? Well, you might want to look around for one of these little devices. Apparently, there's tiny little electronic devices called the Sonic Nausea that can make you nauseous, to be quite honest. There's a ultra high frequency sound wave that can induce queasiness in people that are near it. It also can cause headaches, intense irritation, sweating, imbalance, nausea, and even vomiting. The unique sound wave characteristics make directional source determination difficult. So by tilting your head, by looking around, you can't really figure out where this thing is. I don't know how much out in the open it would have to be, but it only takes 1 9-volt battery. This is a really interesting little gadget, because first of all they're doing is using sound waves. It's something akin to what the cruise ships and the different ships that are out in the ocean right now are trying to use to combat the pirate scourge that's currently out there, because they're shooting like intense focused waves of sound energy that are like supposed to be deafen or disable the pirates. So it'd be kind of funny to see what they could do if they could make all the pirates suddenly and spontaneously start vomiting or something like that. But this is one of those gadgets where you just hope that nobody you know gets one. You know what I mean? All right, moving right along is we've never had a better chance to actually fix the problem with hybrid cars than right now. There is a Polson hybrid electric kit that can turn most compact cars into hybrids. Now, this is the kind of thing that I've been waiting for. I think hybrid technology is fantastic. I think biodiesel and all the other crazy cool technology is awesome. However, it has a limitation. There are so many cars that are on the road right now, there is no non-invasive way to turn these into hybrid vehicles. This is the first kit, even though it's just under $5,000, it's like $4,550. There is no way of taking an existing car and turning it into a much more ecologically sound-minded vehicle. So it's really cool to see this come out. This article's from over at CrunchGear.com. It can either turn your car into a front-wheel drive or a rear-wheel drive compatible. There's no all-wheel drive in this, and doesn't work with SUVs, apparently. But, you know, this is the kind of thing that, you know, this is just the start. With a lot of the other technology that we're talking about here, this is just the start. It's only going to get better and more awesome from here. So as soon as somebody figures out, you know, how to put a little Mr. Fusion in there, and you can have all the garbage like Back to the Future, then I think we'll all be great. But until such time exists, we're going to need conversion kits like this to actually bring cars to the up and ready. You know what I mean? All right, now I've seen a lot of people talking about this next little article about colored flame powder. Change the color of fire with mystical fire powder. And this is stuff that you sprinkle on a campfire or a stove or whatever, or not a stove, that would be very, very stupid, or a fireplace or something, to change the color of the fire. And look, you're a magician. You know what? I got to tell you, this story irritated me so much that I included it. Why? Because it's like nobody has ever been to high school chemistry class when you're looking at this. You know what? You want to get a certain color of fire, you add a certain chemical to it. That's the end all and be all. It's like you want to get green fire, you add copper sulfate to it. You want to get, I think it's like blue fire, you add cobalt to it. You want to add red fire, it's iron ferrite. It's like there's all these things that you can just throw in powder form into fire. You don't need to buy magic fire powder. It's like this is straight out of high school chemistry class. This is not impressive. It looks cool, but guess what? It's been done for years. It irritates me so much that people have kind of taken all this and say, oh, you know, wow, this is fantastic, this is cool, I can't believe that this is real. So, all right, moving right along before I get a little more irritated. The USB kitty hub is more useful than most cats, at least more saying Ogizmo says this. My cat, however, plays fetch, so I think that, you know, that's good. The only thing is I'm trying to work on the second cat to actually make coffee, or at least turn the coffee maker on. So that's the next order of business. But up until that point, they're pretty much freeloaders. So this USB kitty hub is the only time I'm usually going to talk about a hub, but it looks really cool. It's a silhouette of a cat looking down at the cord. The cord, of course, is the USB cord that plugs into your computer. It's bright orange. The tail would cover up the USB ports normally. However, there's three ports on the thing's back. It's looks like it's sturdy. It looks like it's steady, and it looks like it's an interesting idea. The only problem is you have to buy them in lots of 100 direct from China. So I'm probably going to guess there's a little lead paint issue there. You know, maybe yes, maybe no. All right, apparently there's just kind of fun things floating around. It's about to get quite geeky in here. Wired is talking about the most dangerous object in the office. They found 17-inch hand claws. What are they? They're skull and bones gauntlet-style hand claws from TrueSwords.com. These things look like Wolverine's claws, and I understand that they're probably based off a quote-unquote ninja weapon that was actually tiny little grappling claws that was used more like a scratching claw and climbing walls kind of thing. But they're intense 17-inch long straight-up knives. It's primarily meant to be a display piece, I would guess. However, I'm pretty sure if you busted into somebody's house and you found them, dual wielding some adamantium looking claws with little skull and crossbone bracelets attached to them, I'm pretty sure you'd probably head the other direction. They look really cool. They look kind of interesting. I have a sword collection. I have a knife collection. I don't think I'm going to be adding these to them because it doesn't really look like there's a safe way to keep them out of harm's way. So they're not really going to be on my list. All right, and then the next little thing we have up here is flat packing Christmas decor. I don't know about you, but I absolutely hate putting Christmas decorations away. I cannot stand trying to find a place for the stupid light up train that's in our front yard. As cool as it looks during the year, it's a pain in the rear end to find some place to put it during the rest of the year. So this is really kind of interesting, and I like this. This is flat pack holiday decor. It's a way of turning cardboard flat pack structures into pop and play little Christmas ornaments. They have one that's a tree out there. The tree costs $22.95, and they're donating part of the profits from cardboard tree Christmas sales to the Arbor Day Foundation. So hey, I mean, hey, that's cool enough right there. I don't. It's 3 feet tall, so I might have to like check out the pattern for this and see if I can get one for work. While we did Kringle the office this week and we have all the stuff up, nothing quite comes close to as cool as this looks for the little flat pack Christmas. All right, then the last little thing that we have for you here in the Tech Cruft section before we dive on into the caffeine and food and then end you out with the interview is your grandparents might not know how to use a computer. I know mine probably don't at this point, but there's a video that's up over at mopo.ca that is a very serious and real video that tries to get senior citizens to use a computer. I personally am looking at this and going, you know, if I showed this to my grandmother, I'm pretty sure she'd be offended because it really treats senior citizens like idiots. They're saying, you know, that they wouldn't be able to understand the concept of using a mouse, so what they had to do to explain using a mouse as a pointing device is refer to it as a claw game from an arcade where you would go around and you reach, since you can't reach inside the computer, you use the claw tool to reach and grab things for you. Yes, it might have sounded like a great metaphor when you were talking about it online, but you know what? Just like when you're talking to very young children and they say you shouldn't use baby talk and all that other stuff, why would you talk down to somebody who's a senior citizen? It just doesn't make sense. I know so many people who, after a very short and very, you know, brief introduction to, hey, you know what? If you move this, the thing on the screen moves. That thing on the screen is what you need to operate. After like the 30 seconds that it takes to do that, and 99% of the time, these people figure it out on their own. So I think the problem with seniors and computers isn't necessarily that they don't understand what a mouse is. First of all, there's the cost prohibitive factor. A lot of the people are on fixed incomes, and it's not very easy to buy a computer when you're on a fixed income. And second of all, it's the fact that as digital natives, as people who have grown up within the technology, we are much more familiar, much more ready to kind of play around with things. So as long as you give the person the leeway to say, you know what, you're not going to mess up anything, don't worry about it, just go to town, 90% of the time, they're going to do exactly what you expect them to do. They're going to be able to, you know, help themselves out on the computer as long as you are there as a good tech, not one of the goofball techs that I talked about earlier. I'm pretty sure you're going to be able to get grandma or grandpa on the computer with little or no problem at all. All right, moving right along to the caffeine and food section here. We are burning daylight here. I know it's we're hitting it quick and hard. Just a quick little thing before we head on in. If you are listening to this over at a streaming service anywhere in absolutely any place, then you can find this episode or any of the other episodes with better jokes over at www.caffinaton.com. That is caffeination.com. Being that this is the Caffeination Podcast, we thought that that was a good place to keep it. And you can also send us comments, feedback, suggestion, and hate mail over to comment to caffeination@gmail.com. All right, we have a couple little stories about beer here, a little bit about coffee, and then we're going to head on into the interview with Mike Rohde. Up first is space beer. Apparently, every once in a while, somebody takes a goofy experiment up into space, and we had space perfume at one point in time. They had space wine. Now there's space beer. The way they did this was they actually took barley up into space. They grew it inside a container and then harvested the barley. The Russians did this. They harvested the barley. They made it into a tiny little Japanese brewery, and they brewed the first batch of space beer. 100 liters of brew will be taste tested by 30 lucky people, and the rest will probably be researched. From what I've heard, according to the people who had, you know, samples of essential oils and stuff sent into space, apparently zero gravity can have some small effect on the molecular structure of things. That's just what was told to people as more of a marketing ploy, I think, personally. So I don't know if space beer is going to taste any different, but it did beg the question because they're attached to that story. They had 45 million year old beer. What they did was they actually found a Lebanese weevil inside of an ancient Burmese amber chunk. And what they did was they did a little Jurassic Park style thing. They pulled the yeast out of this. They grew it into something that would resemble a type of fossil fuel, and they turned it into the Fossil Fuel Brewing Company. Now, this is, in my opinion, this is not true ancient or old beer. This is beer with ingredients that have been kind of resurrected from older stuff. This isn't necessarily an ancient recipe. For that, you need to talk to Ninkasi. Apparently, in 1989, the Anchor Brewing Company produced a limited edition of beer known as under what they called the Ninkasi label. And they said it was based on a scholarly reconstruction of a Sumerian recipe. I was in a lecture when I was in middle school. My grandfather father knew somebody who was teaching at University of Pennsylvania, and he took me to a lecture called The Flood Myth, and one of the things that they talked about was Ninkasi beer. Why do I remember this from when I was 14? Because it was so interesting, and I was so interested in archaeology that just plain stuck with me. It was one of the coolest things that my grandfather and I ever did together. But what they basically said was there was an excavation that they found a ceremonial bowl next to one of the temple sites that they were working on in Sumeria. And when they examined the residue from inside the bowl, they found certain different mixtures of berries and other things that were in there that would have been created if you had much more of like a honey mead or a different kind of alcoholic beverage. And from further excavation, they found out that attached to the temple was one of the very first breweries that they had ever seen. So they extracted the recipe as best they could, and they sold it in 1989 under a limited edition of beer, and they called it Ninkasi. I would love to have tried this. The recipe apparently started with twice-baked bread. There was malt. It was sweetened with honey and dates. So this is a complete and utter change from the standard beers that you're used to, whereas the $45 million-year-old beer is brewed in a traditional German pale ale style. So it's six of one, half a dozen of another, but I still think it's pretty cool. All right, up next is beer just done weird. Guinness is apparently selling a hat that's more kitsch than anything else, that has a tiny little bottle opener on the side of the brim. I don't know about you, but my neck and my head really aren't something I'd like to strap a bottle opener to. I have a bottle opener on my keychain, and it works just fine for me. Like the hat, wish they'd lose the bottle opener. Guinness is one of my favorite beers, but I gotta tell you, it's just that hat is just wrong in all kinds of ways. All right, my coffee is talking to me again from over at needcoffee.com. They're talking a little bit about coffee stencils. What these are is there's a place over at Etsy.com that is selling stencil patterns, basically, that you would put over a cup of coffee, then shake cinnamon or chocolate powder or nutmeg or whatever else you want, and you could have different things that are on there. They have smiley faces, I'm sorry, friends forever, or coffee, or thank you. They have happy faces, baby things, and the scary one is I'm pregnant. I gotta tell you, if my wife ever handed me a cup of coffee and said I'm pregnant, I would be very confused. Or more than less that if the other way happened, it would just be weird. I'm pretty sure there's different ways that you could go about sort of sharing that news, but I just thought it was kind of fun because I like the idea behind it, but I'd probably make my own stencils before I did anything. And if I end up making my own stencil, you know it's probably going to be the Caffeination logo. You know? All right. Up next, and that was actually the last little thing that we had for you here in the caffeine and food section. Did want to set you up for exactly what you're going to hear on the interview, and then we'll head you on out your way. I'd like to thank everybody for listening to the Caffeination Podcast. Up next, you're going to hear my interview, which is kind of cut into what I think is a more concise version of the conversation I had with Mike Rohde several months ago. We were talking about different things that happen in coffee culture that we both experienced at the same point in time, also trying to give people more of an idea about what the idea behind his calendar for the Sketch Tunes coffee calendar was, and how what he did was there's 12 different pieces of pen art. They're all colorized, and they all are all different types of coffee beverages, and there's information around down on each side of them. I've already ordered mine. I can't wait to get it and spend the next year looking at these fantastic drawings. Mike is an unbelievable artist, and he's a great guy. First of all, you need to head on over to rohdesign.com. That's rohdesign.com, and check out the stuff that he has over there. There's an article right up at the top that talk about the Sketch Tunes calendar for 2009, and without further ado, here is myself and Mike talking about the Sketch Tunes calendar. The whole idea around Sketch Tunes, I read your blog a little bit, and exactly where did that come from? Just a love of drawing, or where else might it have come from?
You know, it's sort of been an organic process. I had a Moleskine pocket notebook. I like the pocket ones because they're small and I can carry them around easily. And I was doing sketches, you know, straight up sketches where I'd sketch something. And then I'd started adding little notes to those sketches, and I thought it was kind of fun. So I started playing around with that a little bit more and sort of stumbled into this style where it was generally some kind of a subject, and then notes all around that subject kind of fit into the page itself. To describe the subject, it could be humorous little comments, or it could be something that was happening while I was doing the drawing or something along those lines, and I just had a lot of fun doing it. So I kept on working those style of drawings and eventually came up with this idea. Well, it's sort of a cartoon and it's sort of a sketch, so I called it a sketch tune.
What is your personal favorite out of all the different ones that you had on there?
You know, that's a good question. I think my personal favorite is Espresso. That was the first one I did. And it reminds me of just recently I picked up a Krups, a little bit nicer espresso machine with a pump in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the little cups that I bought that go with it, whenever I see that image, it reminds me of my pump espresso coffee maker and the delicious crema that I can get out of that thing. And how much I enjoy just a shot of espresso every now and then. So, have you ever tried stovetop mocha pot coffee before?
No, I haven't.
Do you know what those are? Have you seen those?
I think I've seen them.
It's like a little you know the old percolators from the 1940s and 50s. It's kind of a similar process. It's smaller though. They're like these little percolator pots, and often they're made out of aluminum. The better ones are made out of stainless steel, and they're kind of chromed.
Mm-hmm.
And they unscrew in two parts. So the bottom you fill with water, and it's got a steam valve. So you fill that up to the fill point, and then there's a filter that drops into that, and you put in your finely ground coffee, and then there's a seal that's on the top part, and that screws on tight, and you put it on your stove or any hot surface. I mean, I suppose you could do it on an engine block if you're really desperate, but you boil the water, and the water, when it boils, creates pressure and it pushes up through that filter, and then it comes percolating out of the thing and it ends up in the upper chamber.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very close to espresso. It's very good. A lot of people really like it.
Okay.
And it's nice for if you go to a cabin or something like that, you can take that and some coffee along, and all you need is a fire source. You can do it on a grill. You can do it on a fire.
Have you ever had just straight up camp coffee?
You know, I have. My wife and I went to Sweden, and we had a very similar type of camp coffee in Sweden. That's the way they make it there.
Mm-hmm.
They get a special pot that they do their coffee in, and they just throw the grounds right in the water. And then either they don't filter it, I guess the old hardcore Swedes don't filter it at all, or they can run it through a filter when they pour it out. And it was really good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think it's the closest thing to like French press or coffee that I've had. And the only... When we used to go camping, when we would make it, we would just throw a little cup of cold water in at the end, and it settled all the grounds in. So,
yeah, exactly. So. Yeah, that's good stuff.
I got to tell you, diner coffee was my absolute favorite.
Was it really?
Yeah, I love just plain black coffee. So looking at that, I was like, you know what? The only thing that would have made that better if it was in April when I was born. But other than that, it was fantastic.
Well, like, that can be adjusted for next next year.
Well, you already have at least one sale, so don't worry. What made you do color as opposed to black and white?
Well, you know, a lot of the sketch stuff that I do is black and white. In fact, mm-hmm. I just got back from a conference and did black and white sketches for that. And I do like the black and white. There's something I like about that one dimensionality, but in these I felt like I wanted them to be a little more illustrative, and I wanted to have a little more life to them, and I thought it would be a more interesting product for people to look at. I mean, if people are going to look at it for 30 days, it's got to be something interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to do color as opposed to black and white, which I actually drew them in black and white and colored them in the computer using Photoshop.
Okay.
So it was just a matter of making it a little more interesting and a little more colorful and fun. Well, so, you know, if your listeners are interested in giving me feedback, I'd love to hear it. I mean, they're the market that I would be going after with these kind of products. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, feedback about the existing coffee calendar would be good. I don't think I'll be changing it too terribly much, because it seemed like it went over pretty well. It'd be more technical stuff. But those other ideas like tea or some other coffee drinks or maybe coffee blends,
mm-hmm.
or if you've got other ideas, you know, feel free to drop me an email at mike@rohdesign.com, rohdesign.com.
All right, that about wraps it up here for today's show. I'd like to thank Mike Rohde for spending the time with me that he did back then, and I'd like to apologize to him once more for the huge delay in getting the files out and getting the interview up. I would heartily suggest that people head on over to the links in the show notes, or just head on over to Mike's blog at rohdesign.com. and order your own Sketchtoons coffee calendar. It's definitely going to be gracing my office, possibly the caffeination layer as well, but just wanted to pass it along. Hopefully everybody out there enjoyed today's episode. This has been episode number 291, the Mistakes Edition. We're doing our best to fix them, I very much so promise you. Alright, if you were looking for this episode, it and all of the other episodic friends that it has are all over at www.caffeination.com. That is caffeination.com. We are the Caffeination Podcast. We are also a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Find all the other member shows over at techpodcasts.com. We're a proud member of the Blueberry Podcast Network. That's Blubrry. It's blueberry without the E's. And last but most certainly not least, we are a Puzzle Piece production. To find out more about what that means, head on over to puzzlepiecepro.com. I'd like to thank all of you from the bottom of my heart for listening to this episode, giving us a shot, and coming back for more in the future. We're just going to presume that one. Thanks for listening, everybody, and stay caffeinated, people.